As always, I'll start this episode by talking about the sponsors of this podcast, starting with Spotify for Podcasters, which used to be known as Anchor. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with Spotify for Podcasters, if you're looking to create a podcast, Spotify for Podcasters is probably the best app you'll have in order to do that. What it does is that it allows you to record yourself doing whatever you do. I mean, I don't know what subject you would tackle if you wanted to tackle podcasting, but if you're worried about distribution, Spotify for Podcasters solves that by allowing you to publish an episode of whatever you've recorded, and within a matter of minutes or hours, depending on where you are, it'll distribute it across multiple platforms, whether we're talking Apple, Spotify, Lisbon, CurioCaster, Podfreeze, pretty much every podcasting app out there, including Fountain, which is the second sponsor of this podcast. Now, what differentiates Fountain from other podcasting apps? Well, for starters, Fountain is a podcasting 2.0 platform, which contributes to the value-for-value model that the podfather himself, Adam Curry, spoke about. And what makes Fountain special is that, in addition to being a very useful platform, you're able to earn Bitcoin while you listen to your favorite podcasters. No joke. It's pretty much a podcasting app where you can be paid to entertain yourself. It's like as if you were to go to the movies and instead of paying an excessive price for a ticket, and I don't even know what a ticket costs now because it's been a long time since I've actually gone to the movies, which makes me kind of a hypocrite given that in previous episodes of the podcast, I've actually talked about how I often called the streaming phenomenon the streaming regime, something like that, and that was a long time ago. So I guess that just paints me as a bit of a hypocrite. But when it comes to Fountain, you're pretty much earning money by listening to the creators you admire. And you can even support them by sending them sats, which are increments of Bitcoin, for those of you who are still unfamiliar with Bitcoin and what how it's measured. So please, check out the sponsors of this podcast. I've left links down below for you guys to sign up. I hope you all enjoy it, as well as my thoughts on the Oppenheimer trailer. I wasn't very hesitant. I just chose not to watch the trailer for a long time because I wanted to surprise myself. But you know what? I think I should give my thoughts on it because I recently made an episode about the idea of apocalypse from the perspective of the comic book writer Alan Moore, who, despite humorously making fun of the notion of the apocalypse and how he thought it would be great, he was still addressing the fact that it's often misinterpreted as the end of the world, or at least in the sense of which disaster films extort to a point where it almost becomes parody-like. But most people, as I mentioned in that episode, most people don't understand that, and the apocalypse is just another word for revelation, and it's mostly associated with a psychological component. And yes, it is still referred to as the end of the world, but again, as I mentioned in that previous video, you have to really get at the heart is what does it mean when you're talking about the end of the world? Well, when you're talking about the end of the world, you're essentially talking about the end of the reality you perceive. The world is basically just a construct, and a construct is psychological. And I really got that feeling while watching the trailer of Oppenheimer. I've only seen it once, so please forgive me if I'm a little scanty on describing the details of the trailer, but following the trailer, I watched several interviews of Oppenheimer and even some of the announcements Harry Truman made when he announced the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, along with the warnings he gave Japan and what would dropping those bombs ultimately illustrate. But with Oppenheimer, the trailer, I got this notion that there is this, not just this urgency to develop the bomb as a means of war, but there's also the self-awareness of the dangers that this weapon will create, and the misperceptions of creating an ultimate sense of peace. Now, there is some truth to that, because, let's face it, there's always going to be a bigger stick. And having a bigger stick is a bigger advantage. But then, when a bunch of other people have that same bigger stick, it can create all sorts of tensions for potentially dangerous outcomes we want to avoid. with a film like Oppenheimer, the idea of developing a weapon as powerful as the atom bomb does give a sense of safety that nobody could pose a threat to you. But then the fact that it's been invented is essentially a form of self-destruction that could lead to the kind of annihilation that, even if it never happens, the fact that it's on your mind itself is almost an apocalypse of its own. Essentially what I'm saying is that, I mean, I think it's relevant to the current time we're living in, where we're having a war that has only escalated the possibility of nuclear annihilation, yet people carry on with their lives, at least most people, because that's because I guess we've gotten so used to the idea of having nuclear weapons that we've never really used, that we've just grown accumulated a desensitized approach of living with them, almost to the point where we're not only it's not necessarily indifference so much as a customized desensitization to the dangers they truly pose. Because let's face it, if one goes off, it's going to be a chain react. It'll trigger a chain reaction of other nuclear bombs, which could potentially lead to the end of the world and the destruction of the very humanity that was paranoid and focused enough to want to create a weapon like that. And I think we can all be honest in admitting that, I mean, this makes me think of this anime called Neon Genesis Evangelion, but there's a line where a character says in the movie, End of Evangelion, man is the only creature capable of hating itself. And obviously, if a creature like man can hate himself, that can lead to all forms of self-destructive attitudes towards themselves. And although I would never believe that someone like Oppenheimer or the many scientists that were part of the Manhattan Project were pursuing the splitting of the atom as a means of self-destruction, so much as a form of scientific progression and even a form of peace they believed was better than the possibility of the Germans achieving the power of splitting the atom, there is still the fact that in pursuit of peace, they ultimately achieved and developed a new stage of self-destruction, which in many ways led to the kind of despair and psychological destruction of a scientific discovery that ultimately created even more despair. I mean, I might be trailing off, but again, sometimes I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I guess the best way of putting it is when you watch the live interviews of Oppenheimer following the dropping of Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and even the interviews he did when he was a little older, you get the sensation that just the development and the awareness of what the weapon he had helped create led to just brought him to a sense of despair. I don't know the history of Oppenheimer, and I have not read American Prometheus, the book of which the Oppenheimer film is being adapted from. No, has been adapted from. But just watching that interview where he talks about how he fought that Hindu proverb from the Bhagavad Gita, I am death, the destroyer of both worlds, you not only get a sense of despair and total pain in realizing what he contributed to, but you also get this sense that he is fully aware that not only has he delivered this incredibly powerful and potent weapon, but he's also created a new he's created like a psychological shift that is irreversible, I guess. And this actually makes me think of another film which I saw a few months ago, and I'd seen plenty of times. I'm talking about Ex Machina. There's a moment which centers more on the idea of AI. And artificial intelligence is a hot topic in the modern age. So much so that it's no longer just a backdrop or just simply an idea that Sam Harris or Elon Musk can discuss and openly say how terrified they are. Or we're fully seeing the absolute detriment of what AI can do. I mean, ChatGPT itself is a hot topic of discussion. I mean, there's a writer's strike going on right now with the idea that not just the writers are being paid shit, but the fact that artificial intelligence could potentially take away the more creative oriented jobs, that it kind of eradicates the idea of graphic designers, writers, and I mean, actors. Can you imagine that? I mean, I've referenced before in previous episodes that there's apparently a Joe Rogan episode where he interviews Steve Jobs, but it's been clear, and he's stated that that never happened, that that is just part of an AI program. But from what I heard, because I've never seen it, it is so authentic that it makes you wonder, when will that happen with acting performances? When will actors become irrelevant because an AI will be able to generate a simulation that is so real that they become inherently unnecessary? I mean, just look at the way video games alone have advanced so much so that when I look at the graphics of a video game like Death Stranding, I'm amazed at how much it captures the realism of two actors like Lea Seydoux and Norman Reedus, so much so that eventually even that will be irrelevant. But when going back to Ex Machina and the subject of AI, there's a moment where both Oscar Isaac's character and Domhnall Gleeson are discussing the potential change that a character, that an AI like Ava would have on humanity. And there's actually a moment where Domhnall Gleeson quotes Oppenheimer. He says, "I have become Death, the destroyer of both worlds." And it's not because, well, he's obviously mature enough to understand the implications of an evolving AI would have on the world, especially when you look at the idea of humanity itself. You know, what is a human being when you look at it? Yeah, we could say that just because we're organic doesn't mean there isn't some component of there isn't a computerized or robotic component to us. A human being wouldn't be able to function well without a heart. They wouldn't be able to function well without a brain. They wouldn't be able to function well without kidneys. The same way a robot, our general idea of what a mechanical robot would be, if we were to remove a major component within their building framework. And human beings are just like that. We've just gotten accustomed to the idea that because we're organic, we're more authentic than something that is made of metallic parts. And it makes you wonder, when are we gonna, the same, how are the AIs when they become sentient, if they do, what's it going to be like when they look to us in a similar framework? Sorry, had a little burp right there. But we have achieved a sense of comfort where we believe ourselves as gods, almost to the extent that we feel that any choices we make that create major shifts in how we progress or how our world changes, we just get so used to it, we don't see the darker and detrimental implications that these choices make. And this all goes back to a Robert Oppenheimer and the atom bomb. The fact that he developed a weapon as powerful as the atom bomb changed the way the world looked at itself and how easily it could just go. I mean, I've never seen an atom bomb detonate. I've never even seen videos of the testings, and just the way it just is demonstrated shows something horrible. So quick, silent, and bright. Almost like a peaceful way to die, but seeing what it can do, you obviously know that the way I'm describing it carries an absurdity to it, because it is much more destructive, much more horrifying because of how sudden it can be. I mean, I guess I've seen some TV shows where they've had like an atom bomb or a weapon similar to an atom bomb going off, and the first thing that is demonstrated is like this white light that overwhelms and envelops the entire environment. There's no sound right when it happens, and then the boom comes after it's engrossed the entire area. It may not seem like much, but it's the silent moments that truly embody that horror, because it's the awareness of knowing that that moment is going to come, that the more dangerous moment is going to come. But the fact that but again, this goes back to what I was saying about how the fact that Robert Oppenheimer carried this awareness of how he had changed the way the world looked at itself. I mean, you just look in that interview I mentioned earlier in this episode, that you look at the awareness he has, how it just broke him. He almost, I don't know how old he is in that interview, but he looks like a man who is dying of an illness. That's probably from I wouldn't be surprised if he suffered from depression. I don't know. I haven't done much research on the Oppenheimer film because I want to save myself from being spoiled anything I might pontificate in watching any trailers and getting a sense of what it'll be. And I mean, I'm pretty sure Christopher Nolan has worked hard to keep everything under wraps to make sure that anything he presents to an audience is kept on a general basis, that they only know the basic stuff about a guy like Oppenheimer rather than getting the full story. Still, I look at that interview of the actual Oppenheimer, and I don't know how much they're going to capture in the Oppenheimer film. It wouldn't surprise me if it does end on that kind of tragic note, because it's very ironic that the same year that the idea of nuclear annihilation has become a prevalent topic is the same year that a film like Oppenheimer comes out. It's just kind of poetic, but that could all just be coincidence when you think about it, because Christopher Nolan was going to tell that story one way or the other. But the fact that that all of a sudden nuclear annihilation has become more prevalent and it's engrossed our culture more at this moment, there is some absurdity to it, because, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that we've grown so accustomed to the idea of having this type of weaponry at our disposal while knowing what it can do if we even fuck up once does border on an absurdity. And I think it grants humanity a chance to truly look at itself, because what would it take for us to truly acknowledge the full dangers of these weapons and just the overall existence and how we've dealt with them for so many decades, that it's only now that we're in another war, where the world is in another war. In many ways, I do think this is World War III. It's just people haven't truly acknowledged it, because World War III has been kind of almost like a pop culture meme rather than an actual phenomenon. But yet you have to really ask yourself, are World War I and World War II really the same war? Are they just different in the way that they're framed? And not every war is framed in the same sense, but ultimately the destructive capacities that war itself has is something to truly take into account, rather than thinking that just the titles alone separate them, when war is war. Now, there are different types of wars, and there are multiple ways in which wars can be fought, but the impact and the global impact that they have is the most important thing to take into account. And obviously the Ukraine war with Russia has had a global effect. And even though the US isn't as directly as involved as it would have been in World War II, the fact that it's playing a role has brought us to greater contemplate the dangers of nuclear annihilation, given that Russia and China have their own roles in this, China stayed away from it, but it's raised its head in a sense. Again, I'm saying this in the context that all the major players of the nuclear bombs are involved in a sense, and the fact that just the wrong move can trigger it has made us more aware of it to an extent where it makes you wonder, what will it take for us to truly understand and realize we've been too comfortable with this idea of carrying weapons that have the capacity to destroy ourselves, that maybe we should have learned this a long time ago, maybe from the very beginning. I mean, it's no question that Oppenheimer understood this, and that's what probably broke him to the deteriorating fashion you see in those interviews he has, because you don't even have to watch the interview, you just have to watch the main part and look at the absolute despair in his eyes and how much of his own humanity was probably, or hope for humanity was shattered for having created something that, well, obviously changed the perception of how the world looked at itself. I mean, obviously the 1940s and 50s, you get shit like Leave It to Bieber and you think that's a fucking Disneyland illusion of how the world is, as opposed to the world, as opposed to what the world really is. And it's just a construct that is in a constant influx of change. So much so that it's really difficult to predict what will be the next big red button. And I guess Woody Allen discussed this once in a 2007 interview, that every couple of years somebody pushes a giant button and then everything changes. I mean, 9/11 in many ways was a big red button, and it reframed how we look at terrorism, or how we misinterpret the idea of combating terrorism, because there can't be a war on terror. You can't win a war on terror, given that terror is an abstraction. I mean, you can certainly fight it, but win? Well, terrorism is just an idea in many ways. And I'm going back to Alan Moore and his comic book V for Vendetta. Ideas are bulletproof. I can't say the same though for my arguments in this episode of the podcast, because I feel like I'm just treading back and forth in an attempt to sound like an intellectual, or just someone who really just likes horror, pretending they're an expert podcaster. Anyway, I hope you liked this episode for what it was worth. Hope it got you thinking more carefully about not just Oppenheimer, the film that's coming up next month, actually in a month from today, which is fucking awesome, but just about the implications it has about the way humanity has lived with its potential annihilation and been so comfortable with it, almost to a disturbing degree. Anyway, hope you all enjoy this episode again, and till next time.